I apologize. He resents Enzo's interest in you. He's always considered himself Enzo's best fighter, and he dislikes that the prince's eye has now wandered. Give him time. I silently thank him for his concern. My heart lurches embarrassingly at the thought that Enzo is interested in me. In my potential powers, I correct myself. Spider's words remain in my thoughts, taunting me, and I feel the ghost of his blade cold on my neck. Would Enzo really slit my throat? As if on cue, the cavern doors swing open. I jerk my head in its direction. Enzo comes back in, his long robes trailing behind him. He pauses for a moment at the door, looking quietly around the cavern. Then he whistles at Star Thief. It's time, he calls out. How are you feeling today? Star Thief whispers at her two coyotes to stay, then hurries over and skids to a halt. She gives him a cheeky look. Feeling pretty good, she replies with a quick bow. As always. A faint smile plays at the edge of Enzo's lips. Excellent. Let's move. Star Thief's face lights up, and I have no trouble believing Raffaella's words that she aligns with Joy. She waves over the others. Raffaella rises to his feet in one fluid movement, then gives me a nod. Stay a while longer, if you'd like to practice, he tells me. We'll return tonight. They leave the cavern without a word. I'm the only one remaining. Enzo doesn't even glance at me. I realize I've been holding my breath. My darkness stirs in me, and I let it churn. I have no idea what they were talking about. Obviously, they're off on another mission without me. This is my chance to meet with Taryn. The shock of that thought leaves me weak at the knees. My week is almost up. If the daggers will be gone for a while, busy with whatever it is they have planned, then I need to take advantage of this moment. I suddenly look around the chamber, terrified that somehow one of them managed to overhear my silent thoughts. The Malfetto murder I saw days earlier comes back to me. Then Spider's threat. Then thoughts of my sister. I'll just go near the tower. If it looks suspicious, I'll leave. I'm not going inside. I'll just... My thoughts fade away, drowned out by the beat of my heart. I stand. I start to move. I'm not even sure if I'm in control of myself anymore, or if my body has decided to let my instincts take over. I ascend the stairs and make my way past the main courtyard. There, I glimpse the streets and see them teeming with festivities. The sky overhead looks dark and menacing. Something important is going on in the city today. The daggers are on the move. So am I. Give a Kinetrin gold, and he will do business with you. Give a Kinetrin a purebred stallion, and he will kill for you. Commission on the Prosecution of Moran and Accomplice, High Court of Beldane. Adelina Amuteru. The instant I sneak out the Fortunata Court and into the main street, I sense that something's off. Sure, people in colorful silks fill the road, and vendors selling masks are everywhere, clogging the street and hawking their wares like they would at a spring masquerade in Dahlia. People laugh and cheer. Flowering vines grow thick and lush along the street's buildings, and horses pulling carriages and crates make their way up and down the wide roads. Gondolas line up the river canals, heavy with passengers. A man pushing a cart of fruit tarts sings a folk song while a small cluster of children dance after him. The smell of butter and spices mixes with the pungent odor of crowds. But black clouds blanket the sky, even darker than when I glimpsed it earlier from the courtyard. There's a dampness in the air, a cold, tense stillness that contrasts sharply with the colorful banners hanging from balconies and the festivities on the street. The smiling people in masquerade masks look threatening to me, as if everyone knows what I'm about to do and where I'm headed. I keep my face down. There are reports posted by the Inquisition Axis at each main intersection, calling for people to report any suspicious malfettos. I instinctively push myself into the crowd, trying to stay hidden. Everyone seems headed in the same direction, so I follow along, lost among their glittering outfits and bright masks. My slippers slap against the curve of cobblestone. What a Stenzian celebration is this? I wonder as I pass through a narrow street with low-hanging vines dangling overhead. For the Red Quarter! Someone shouts beside me, waving a piece of red silk high over his head. It takes me a moment to realize that everyone in the crowd is waving colors of silk. Red, green, gold, and blue. Off in the distance and near the harbor, the roof of the Inquisition Tower shines under the sun. The crowd jostles me. Finally, I manage to squeeze my way out of the main crowds and down a narrow, quieter alley. I'm careful to stay in the shadows. If I knew how to use my powers, I could probably use a dark silhouette to hide myself even further. I try to call in it again, but the threads stay just outside of my grasp, taunting me. By the time I reach the Inquisition Tower, I'm drenched in sweat and trembling from head to toe. I'm lucky that few people seem to be in this area of the city. Everyone is off at the festivities. I stare at the entrance where Inquisitors stand guard and try to imagine Violetta inside the stone walls. I hesitate, wringing my hands. What if Terran doesn't have Violetta at all? What kind of trap might this be? I bite my lip, dwelling on how Terran had not arrested me at the court, how he threatened to kill Violetta if I didn't come. I stare so long at the tower that my vision starts to blur. Finally, when the street is clear, I hurry on silent feet to the tower's entrance. The Inquisitors standing guard bar me. What's this? One of them grunts. Please. I manage to say in a hoarse whisper. Already I feel exposed out here. If one of the elites sees me... I am here to see Master Terran Santoro. He's expecting me. The Inquisitor studies me suspiciously, then exchanges a look with the second Inquisitor at the entrance. He shakes his head at me. I'll pass the word to Master Santoro, he says to me. Until then, you'll have to wait out here. No, I say in a rush, then look around me again at the streets. Sweat beads my brow. I have to see him now. I add in a lower, urgent voice. I cannot be seen here. Please. The Inquisitor shoves me away with an irritated look. You will wait here, he snaps, until such time as... His words cut off as the door behind him shutters, then swings slowly open. There, standing casually at the entrance with his hands folded behind his back, is Terran. He smiles at the sight of me. What seems to be the problem? He says to the guards. The Inquisitor who shoved me whirls around bewildered. All annoyance falls from his face. He bows hastily to Terran. Sir, he begins, this girl claims she's here to see you, we... And so she is, Terran interrupts, his pale eyes focused on me. I've been watching you make your way toward the tower. He gestures for me to come closer. I swallow hard, then hurry past the two Inquisitors with my head down. When I step into the tower, Terran shuts the door behind me. I sag in relief at the knowledge that I'm no longer exposed outdoors. Then I shudder at the sight of the tower's great hall, decorated with the same furs, tapestries, and symbols of the eternal sun as the tower in Dalia where I was imprisoned. Terran leads me into a narrower hall, then in a chamber with a long table and chairs. There he pulls out a chair for me and offers me the seat. I sit, shaking. My throat feels parched. Terran sits down beside me, then leans back in a relaxed posture. You kept your promise, he says after a while. I appreciate that. It saves me a great deal of trouble. I don't want to ask what he would have done if I hadn't shown up. Instead, I meet his gaze. Is my sister safe? I whisper. Terran nods. Safe and unharmed. For now. Let me see her. He laughs a little at that. The amusement never reaches his eyes, though, and the ice in his stare chills me to the bone. How about first you tell me something I want to know? He says. I stay quiet, unsure of what to say. My thoughts blur together into a frantic river. How little can I tell him to keep Violetta safe? What will satisfy him? I take a deep breath, then gather all the courage I can muster. I'll tell you nothing if you can't prove you have her. Taryn's smile widens and he regards me with a more interested look. A bargainer, he murmurs. He waits a long moment before he leans back in his chair. He reaches into the space between his sleeve and his arm guard. I thought as much. As I look on, he pulls something out and tosses it onto the table. It lands with a clink. I peer closer. It's a sapphire necklace that Violetta likes to wear. But it is even more than that. Tied to the necklace's silver chain is a long, thick lock of Violetta's dark hair. My heart jumps into my throat. Before you begin, Taryn says, cutting through my thoughts, I want to make something very clear. He leans forward. His eyes pierce me. My word is always good, so do not make a habit of testing it. You'll want to tell me the truth. I have many, many eyes in this city. If you lie, I will find out. If you deny me what I want, I will hurt her. Do you understand? He has her here. I press my hands hard into my dress to keep them from trembling. Yes, I whisper. I don't dare question him further. Now, since it seems like you are at a loss for where to begin, let me help you along with some questions. He leans on his knees with his elbows and taps his hands together. What have you been doing with the elites up until now? I take a deep breath. I need to stall this for as long as I can. Resting, mostly, I reply. I'm surprised at how level my words are. I was unconscious for many days. Yes, of course. Taryn almost looks sympathetic. You had many injuries. I nod in silence. They don't trust me yet, I decide to say. They wear those silver masks. I don't know their names or identities. Taryn is not so easily fazed. What do you know? I swallow. The air feels so heavy. I must tell him something. As if in a dream, I feel the words emerge. They visit me occasionally at the Fortunata Court, I whisper. Taryn smiles. Do they operate from there? I'm not sure. I can hear my heartbeat. The darkness growing in my chest makes me dizzy. I sway in my seat, hungry to use the power. I wish I had Enzo's abilities, I suddenly think, and the wish makes the ambition in me surge. I wish I had the power to burn this entire tower to the ground. Tell me, Adelina, Taryn says, watching me curiously. What are they planning? With a great effort, I push the rising darkness down. I cannot use my powers on him. I'm too weak. Besides, what would a bunch of shadows do? I clear my throat. What can I tell him? What will do the least harm? They are planning something for the Tournament of Storms, I manage to say. I don't know what. Taryn considers my words. Then he claps his hands once, and a moment later, an inquisitor opens the door. Sir. Taryn waves him over. He whispers something in the other man's ear that I cannot hear. The man casts me a weary look. Finally, Taryn pulls away. Tell the king immediately, he says. The other inquisitor bows low. Of course, sir. He hurries off. Is that all? Taryn asks me. Rafaela's gentle face appears in my thoughts, and with it comes a stab of guilt. I've given him so little. Please let this be enough to satisfy him. That's all I know, I whisper. I need more time. For a long moment, Taryn doesn't move. Just as I start to think that he'll demand more from me this visit, he relaxes and looks away. You came to me today, he says. And that is a useful start. Thank you for your information. For keeping your word, I shall keep mine. Your sister is safe. Tears spring to my eye and I slump in relief. She is safe for as long as you continue to satisfy me. His eyes swivel back to me. When will I see you again?
2 weeks,
I say hoarsely.
Give me 2 more weeks.
At his silence, I look down.
Please.
Finally, he nods. Very well. He rises. You may go. And that is all. Taryn guides me out of the tower through a small back entrance hidden behind a gate and an alley. Before he lets me go, he takes my hands in his. He bends down to brush his lips against one of my cheeks.
You've done well, he whispers.
He kisses my other cheek.
Keep it up.
Then he leaves me alone, and I wander back through the city's streets on trembling legs.
I am a traitor. What have I done?
I wander, lost in a daze, until I realize that I've made my way back in the direction from where the earlier festivities had been going on. Here, silent streets make way for noisy revelers again, and before I know it, I turn a street corner and find myself engulfed by a cheering mob. My fear and exhaustion make way for a touch of curiosity. What's all the commotion? There's no way I can make it back to the Fortunata court without going through all these people. Then I turn another corner with the crowd, and we enter the largest public square I've ever seen. The piazza is surrounded on 3 sides by water canals. People fill the space where they can, but most of it is completely fenced off with thick lengths of rope. Looping around the piazza is a dirt track, which several inquisitors are expecting. A line of people dressed in elaborate silk costumes and ornate masks parade along the edge of the track. Standard bearers and trumpeters and arlequinos, aristocrats and their valets, all waving at the cheering onlookers. My eye wanders the crowd, which now looks roughly partitioned into segments of people waving either red, blue, gold, or green silks in the air. People crowd onto the balconies lining the square. Each balcony has colorful flags hanging from it, muted by the dark sky. A horse race. I'd witnessed several before in Dahlia, although none were quite this big of a spectacle. I glance around the piazza, looking for a good route back to the court. The dagger's mission today must have to do with this. I look up to the balconies. Now I pick out the royal seats. On a building situated at the front of the racetrack is a balcony that gives a perfect view, its iron railings decorated with gold and white silks. But the king and queen aren't there. Maybe their royal seats are just for show. A low rumble of thunder echoes through the city. Ladies and noblemen, fellow spectators, one of the costumed men on the racetrack holds both arms high in the air, the race's trumpeter, the official announcer. His booming voice hushes the roar of the crowd. The parade of colorful costumes pauses, and the scene changes from one of merry chaos to one of hushed anticipation. Inquisitors stand around the square, ready to keep order if needed. Thunder rumbles overhead as if warning.
Welcome to the qualifying races for Estensia, the trumpeter calls out.
He turns in a circle so that everyone can see him, and then stops to face the direction of the empty royal balconies. He bows low with an elaborate flourish.
Let this be a tribute to our royal majesties and the prosperity they bring to Kenetra.
The response surprises me. No clapping or cheers from the crowd. Just a rumble of unrest and a few scattered, "Long live the king!" shouts uttered. Back home in Dahlia, people complained about the king. Now I'm hearing that resentment firsthand. I imagine Enzo seated in the royal seats instead, the crown prince and rightful ruler. How natural he would look. How many of these spectators are loyal to Enzo? How many are elite supporters? For an instant, I dare to imagine myself up there on the balcony. The thought of such power leaves me trembling. The announcer turns his attention back to the crowd.
Today you will select from Estensia the fastest riders to send to this summer's Tournament of Storms. 3 racers have been chosen from each of our city's quarters. As tradition decrees, the top 3 racers from today's roster of those 12 will continue on.
He grins widely, his teeth shining a brilliant white under his glittering half-mask.
He puts one hand to his ear in an exaggerated gesture. Which quarter will come out on top? Here, the crowd's enthusiasm erupts. They roar with the names of their quarters. Colored silks wave furiously through the air. I'm hearing the red quarter, the announcer taunts, causing a fresh round of cheering as the other three quarters scream themselves hoarse. Wait, now I'm hearing the blue quarter. But the green quarter has a strong crop of three-year-old colts this year, as does the gold quarter. Who will it be? He waves his hands in a flourish. Shall we see our riders? The crowd shrieks. I stay frozen in place. The tournament of storms. This is what Raffaele had been talking about earlier. This is why the daggers are here. This is their mission. They're trying to get one of their own to qualify for the Tournament of Storms horse race, probably to get a shot at the king in a very public arena. My head feels fuzzy with shock, and now I've alerted Taryn to it. Amid the chaos of cheers, the first three stallions parade out. Red quarter citizens wave silks in the air, patting the horses' sides as they trot through the masses and onto the track. I'm momentarily distracted. It takes only one look to know that these stallions have superior blood to the horses I remember from my father's estate. These are Sunland purebreds, with perfectly arched necks and flared nostrils, their eyes still glowing with the wild temper that my horses had lost long ago. They toss their decorated manes adorned with red silks as their riders, similarly adorned, wave at their supporters. Then the green quarter's riders and their steeds come trotting out. This is when I let out a small gasp. One of the green quarter's riders is Star Thief. The purple marking across her face is visible and prominent.
Lady Gemma of House Salvatore, riding Master Aquino's glorious stallion keepsake.
He goes on to list out the stallion's past wins, but I'm no longer listening. In the midst of roaring crowds, I realize that Gemma's family must be a wealthy and powerful one, for a malfetto like her to be allowed to compete like this. I should head back to the Fortunata court before they find me missing. But the spectacle is too much to resist, and my feet stay chained to the ground, my stare fixed on the girl I know as Star Thief. Gemma's presence stirs a near riot in the crowd. I hear, Malfetto! Spat out in the air, mixing with a loud roar of boos, and when I take a good look at the crowd, I notice people who have put false markings on themselves, jeering and taunting Gemma with exaggerated purple patches painted on their own faces. One of them even flings rotten fruit at her. Bastard child! He screams, a cruel grimace twisting his face. Gemma ignores him, keeping her head high as her horse trots past. Other insults fly fast and thick. A noble lady still gets insults like this? I bite my cheeks at the sharp twinge of anger that shoots through me, until I notice with a start that there are people defending her too, loudly. In fact, huge crowds of people are waving their flags in the air in her support, most from her green quarter, some even from the other quarters. I suck in my breath and my anger changes to bewilderment, then to excitement. I look on in awe as Gemma nods in their direction. Never in my life have I seen such a sight. The tension between Gemma's supporters and enemies crackles in the air, an early taste of potential civil war. And I take in a deep breath as if to inhale the power it gives me. Not everyone hates malfettos, Enzo had said. My eye darts nervously to the inquisitors, who look poised to act. Gemma soaks in the attention. She tosses her dark hair and grins back at the spectators, focusing on the ones who shout out their support for her. Then she hops up onto her stallion's back in one fluid motion. She balances there on both feet, nimble and petite, her arms crossed in satisfaction. Gemma waves, then jumps back down into a seated position. The entire time her stallion stays perfectly calm. Of the competitors so far, she is the only malfetto. The next two quarters' competitors finally trot out,
and the 12 organized themselves into a staggered line at one end of the track. The crowd's roar is thunderous now. Gemma rubs her horse's neck, and the stallion paws the ground in anticipation.
"Riders, prepare your horses!" the announcer calls out.
The crowd's roar dies down for a brief second as everyone hushes to watch the start. The trumpeter lifts a bright yellow silk, weighted down with a stone. He flings it skyward.
"Go!"
he screams. The horses break. The crowd explodes. A cloud of dust showers the track as the riders race their first lap around the track. I squint through the haze, then finally catch sight of Gemma's green silks flying in the pack. She's among the last half, but she wears a grin that could split her face. First lap. A red rider's ahead, and Gemma is ninth. I find myself cheering for her silently. All around me is screaming and shouting as each person calls out the names of their favorites. The chaos reminds me of my execution day, and with that, I feel darkness gathering within me. Raffaele had told me to watch the empty space, to look for threads of energy in the air. The horses thunder around the bend and past me. Gemma has her head thrown back in a wild laugh, her dark hair streaming out behind her like a curtain. I focus on the space between her and other riders. There's a flicker of something shining in the corner of my eye. It vanishes when I try to look directly at it. The horses storm down the track again, nearing the end of the second lap. Only one more lap to go. Gemma is still in ninth. Then suddenly she makes her move. She pulls on her stallion's mane, leans close to his neck, and whispers to him. At the same time, a gust of wind blows through the square. Windwalker. She must be watching from a vantage point. Gemma starts moving up, fast. Ninth to seventh, then seventh to sixth, then fifth. Fifth to fourth to third. The cheers of the Green Quarter's onlookers turn fever-pitched. My heart thuds furiously. With Windwalker's help and her own abilities, Gemma pulls gradually into second. I hold my breath. Concentrate. I stare hard at Gemma. For a split second, I think I see threads glittering in the air, a thousand different colors, moving and shifting like strings on a loom. The red riders in first and third place try to block her, forcing her between them. But Gemma pushes harder. The two other riders' horses toss their heads, startled, when dust kicks up near their hooves. Windwalker must have sent a current of wind to their legs, pushing them back. A quarter of a lap to go. Gemma's horse suddenly pulls ahead in a burst of speed right into first place. The others try to catch her, but it's too late. She crosses the finish line. The trumpeter flings the yellow silk in the air again, and shrieks fill the air. The Green Quarter is a sea of dancing silks. She won. I can't resist a smile of relief. Even as I pretend to be as subdued as the rest of the Blue Quarter I'm standing with. Perhaps all Terran can do with the information I gave him is to post more Inquisitors to the tournament when it happens. Perhaps I didn't affect the Dagger's plans. All around the square are boos, furious shouts of, "Disqualify her!" and "Malfetto!" accusations that she is one of the young elites. Still, no one can argue. We saw her win the race. The trumpeter approaches Gemma, who's taking a bow from where she's standing, balanced on her stallion's back, and hands her the weighted yellow silk with a ceremonial flourish. Even though he stays festive, I notice him avoid contact with her, jerking his hand away so that he can't be dirtied by her touch. Gemma's smile wavers, the first sign that she's bothered by the treatment. But she still lifts her head high and masks her discomfort behind a widening grin. Then the trumpeter goes around to the other riders, handing each of them a length of green silk. The tradition is the same as it is in Dahlia. The losing riders must wear the colors of the winner's quarters on their arms for the next 3 days to show their good sport.
"Lady Gemma of House Salvatore," the trumpeter shouts. "Order, order!"
One of the Inquisitors calls out from where they're fencing in the people, but only a few seem willing to listen to him. The green quarter in particular is a frenzy of color and sound. The other quarters murmur indignantly among themselves. I start pushing my way out of the crowd, the way I'd come. If the races are over, then I should head back before anyone notices I'm gone.
Order, I say!
The Inquisitor barks out. I halt where I am. More Inquisitors block the square's exits, forcing me to stay put. One Inquisitor calls the trumpeter aside, says something to him that the crowd can't hear, and then, to my surprise, calls two other Inquisitors over to force Gemma to dismount from her horse. The other riders hurriedly make their way off the track and into the crowd. The crowd stirs as one Inquisitor rides his steed into the middle of the square. He holds his hands up for quiet.
Ladies and noblemen, he begins, I congratulate the Green District and their Malfetto on her spectacular win.
Gemma stands uncomfortably alone in the square, suddenly unhappy with all the attention. I have to get out of here. Now.
However, I bring news from the palace. His Majesty has decreed that Malfettos are no longer eligible for the Tournament of Storms.
Immediately, the red and blue districts cheer, while the green erupts into angry shouts. Out in the square, Gemma remains on the track, uneasy and tense. I swallow hard. A wave of guilt hits me. This is my doing. The trumpeter exchanges a few more bewildered words with the Inquisitors. Then he goes around to each of the other riders, collects their green sashes back, and hands them a red one instead, silently acknowledging the second-place finisher's win. The green quarter roars their fury. Already, scuffles are breaking out in the crowd. My gaze stays on Gemma's lone figure out in the square, bewildered and helpless, and for a moment I'm reminded of Violetta. The Inquisitors hold her there as if they think she'd throw a fit. The trumpeter hands her a red sash. My hands grip the edges of my silk so tightly that I swear my nails are cutting open the skin of my palms. Threads of energy glitter in the air, signs of the crowd's, of my own, rising fear. My fingertips tingle, humming with the growing power. Through the masses, my father's ghost appears and disappears. He glides through the people, his haunting smile fixated on me. Gemma's cheeks burn with shame. The crowd falls into complete silence. One of the Inquisitors holding her now wraps the red sash around her upper right arm. She bites her lip, keeping her eyes turned downward. The Inquisitor winds it three times, then yanks it viciously tight. Gemma gasps out loud and winces.
Sir Barra of the Red Quarter,
the trumpeter calls out as the new winner holds his arms up. Gemma's eyes stay down. Get out of there, I suddenly think at her, wishing she could hear me. A million threads hang over the square. Suddenly, someone in the crowd hurls a rock at the Inquisitor's head. The Inquisitor blocks it with his sword before it can reach him, and it clatters off the metal and falls harmlessly to the ground. His eyes search the crowd for his attacker, but all he sees is a sea of stricken faces, suddenly silent and pale. I tense along with the crowd. In Dahlia, attacking an Inquisitor is punishable by death. The Inquisitor nods at his companions. Gemma lets out a cry of protest as they force her to her knees. The crowd gasps. Even the troublemakers, the ones who had insulted Gemma so freely earlier, now look uncertain. To my shame, excitement instead of horror wells up in my chest and my fingertips tingle. My darkness is a building storm, black as the sky, the threads wound tight with tension and filling every crevice of my mind. The daggers must be preparing to make a move. They must be ready to save her, right? Raffaele said that Gemma's powers scatter when she's frightened.
Perhaps we need a harsher reminder for this audience, the Inquisitor snaps. On the etiquette of good sport.
He presses his sword against her neck hard enough to draw blood.
Where are you, Enzo?
I can't hold back any longer. I have to do something. Before I can stop myself, I reach out with my mind and pull on the strings of energy inside me. The ease hits me with such a thrill. There is so much tension to feed on here. So much unease and ugliness. Such dark feelings. Raffaella's words flash through my thoughts.
I focus, gathering all my concentration on the specific threads I'm pulling, knowing what I want to make. The threads push back, protesting the change, but I force them to bend to my will. Up on the roofs, shadowy silhouettes rise. Sweat beads on my forehead, but I force myself to keep my focus. I struggle to hold on to the threads, but there are so many of them. Clenching my teeth, I force the shape of the silhouettes to change, and for the first time they listen to me. The silhouettes take on the shapes of daggers, their dark hoods and silver masks intact, crouching by the dozens on the rooftops like silent sentinels, black against the stormy sky. I hold them all in position there. My breaths turn ragged. I feel like I've been running for hours. Some of the silhouettes quiver, barely able to retain their shape. Hold on. They stabilize. I catch my breath at how real they look. The Inquisitors glance up at the roofs. The sword falls away from Gemma.
The elites!
Several in the crowd shriek, pointing up at my illusion.
They're here!
The crowd bursts into screams. The horses startle. Gemma hops to her feet, her eyes wide, and seizes the moment to scamper back into the crowd. The rush of darkness through me is intoxicating and irresistible, and I find myself embracing it, letting it cover my insides like ink. Such power over these little masses. I love it. I'm not strong enough to hold the illusion in place. The silhouettes scatter into nothingness as soon as I pull them back below the roofline. I shove my way frantically out of the square with the others. My sudden burst of bravado is replaced with anger at myself. Now Enzo will know for certain that I was here. They might find out why I was really in the streets. They might find out about my meeting with Taryn and what I told him. Nausea churns in me. I have to leave here. All around me, people try to flood out of the square. Some Inquisitors are blocking the exits, but there are too many of us and not enough of them. I'm careful to stay close to the walls of the buildings as people shove past me. All around me is a blur of chaos and colors, masked faces and the sensation of others' fear. Threads of energy glitter in the air. Then, out of nowhere, an arrow comes flying from the sky and hits an Inquisitor in the chest. It hits him so hard that it knocks him off his horse. The people near him shriek, scattering in all directions. Another arrow comes flying, and then another. The Inquisitors turn their attention to their invisible attackers, and as they do, the people finally break past the blocked paths and free themselves from the square. My heart hammers in my chest at the sight of blood. The daggers. I stumble out of the square, then retrace my steps as I rush along with the others. Behind me, I hear Inquisitors shouting for order. The sounds of scuffles tell me that they're making arrests as they go. I rush on. Energy courses through me in relentless waves, feeding me even as I try to ignore the flood of power in my veins. In spite of everything, I feel a strange sense of glee. All this chaos is of my own creation. By the time I reach the court, I'm soaked in sweat. My breaths come hard. I round a corner to the side wall of the court facing a narrow street, then climb on the ivy and hoist myself over the low ledge. I collapse inside a courtyard. Then I pick myself up, dust off my hands, and pull open a side gate that leads to the inner chambers. Finally, I reach the secret wall. I push on it, step through, and rush toward my room. There. I've made it back before the others. I'll head to my room and... but someone's already waiting for me in the hall. It's Enzo. The sudden sight of him catches me by surprise. Any hope of being spared his wrath is dashed when I see the expression on his face. His eyes are alight, the scarlet in them brighter than usual.
"You were to stay here," he says. His voice is deadly quiet. "Why did you leave?"
Panic rises in my throat. He knows. Something stirs behind him. I glance over his shoulder to see Windwalker, her mask off. Spider lurks farther down the hall, his arms crossed as he leans against the wall. He looks smug, eager to see me punished.
"Huh," he says. "Little lamb's in trouble."
I keep my focus on Enzo and try to think of some clever comeback, anything to protect myself. I start to say, "I wanted help."
"You caused a riot out there," Spider interrupts me. "Ever stop to think of what might happen if you lost control of your powers?"
"I stepped in for Gemma,"
I reply, suddenly angry.
"I wasn't about to wait around and see her killed."
Spider's lips curl up.
"Maybe it's time you keep your words locked inside that pretty little mouth, where they belong."
My voice flattens. "Careful, lest I hurt you." I don't even know where the words come from until they've already left me. Enzo hushes us both with a shake of his head.
"Dante," he says, without bothering to glance over his shoulder.
It takes me a second to realize that Enzo has revealed the spider's real name to me.
"You were dismissed."
The boy's rage changes to disbelief at the use of his name in front of me. Or at his dismissal, maybe both.
"You'll let this girl have her way?" he spits out. "She could have gotten one of us killed. She could have ruined the entire mission."
"The Inquisition ruined the mission," Enzo interrupts. His eyes stay on me, and I feel the familiar shudder pulse through my heart.
"You were dismissed. Do not make me say it again."
Dante hesitates for a moment, then he pushes away from the wall.
"Watch your back, little lamb," he snaps at me before stalking off down the hall.
Windwalker watches him go, shrugs, and regards me with a suspicious look.
"Now what, Reaper?" she says. "A whole new plan for the Tournament of Storms?"
"No need."
She snorts.
"But they've disqualified Gemma," she says. "She can't get close to the Royals if she won't be able to race."
Enzo studies me with a gaze so intense that it leaves my cheeks red.
"Not if someone disguises her," he replies.
I blink, my mind spinning with the new information they're feeding me. First, Spider's real name. Now this. Is he pleased with me? Permitting me to participate in the Dagger's plans? I could learn to disguise Gemma. I could disguise any one of them to ride in the race. Enzo steps closer until he's now barely a foot away from me. The heat emanating from him burns my skin through the fabric of my clothes. He reaches out one hand and touches the clasp that pins my cloak at my neck. The metal turns white hot. When I look down, I see threads fraying on the cloak's cloth, their ends blackened and singed. My fear rises up into my throat.
"You want to train faster?" he says.
I keep my chin up, refusing to let him see my anxiety.
"Yes."
He's silent. A second later, he removes his hand from my cloak's clasp, and the heat is sucked out of the melting metal as if it were never there. I'm shocked it didn't burn straight through to my skin. When I look back up at Enzo, I notice a tiny spark of something else behind his rage, something in his eyes that sends a different kind of warmth tingling through me.
"So be it," he replies.
My heart jumps.
"But I warn you, Adelina, Dante is right. There is one line you do not cross with me."
His eyes narrow as he folds his hands behind his back.
"You do not recklessly endanger my elites."
His words sting, labeling me as someone separate from them. I am separate from them. I am a spy and a traitor. Besides, what if things had gone horribly wrong when I used my powers? If I hadn't been there, the other daggers would surely have made a move to protect her, and they are certainly more skilled than I am. What if Gemma had instead been harmed during my antics because I didn't know what I was doing? What if the Inquisition had chosen to blame her for the false elites on the roofs? What if Taryn had seen me out there? I'm sorry. I murmur at the ground, hoping he doesn't hear in my voice all the reasons why. Enzo makes no indication that he has accepted my apology. His stare feels like it can burn straight through my skin. This will be the last time you disobey me, he says without a single hesitation, and I realize with a horrible shudder that he means exactly what he says. If he finds out about Taryn, he really will kill me. Tomorrow. His voice is hard as a diamond. Be at the cavern by dawn. Let's see how fast you can learn. Then he breaks the stare, steps away from me, and leaves down the hall. Windwalker lingers for a moment. She gives me a small nudge and a grudging smile, then extends a hand. I'm Lucent, she says. I take her hand, unsure what to say in return. Another barrier between me and the daggers breaks down. I don't know whether to feel joy or guilt. That's his way of showing thanks for your help, by the way, she says before she turns away. Congratulations. He's going to train you himself.
Taryn Santoro. Do you have any idea who Lady Gemma is? Taryn stays bowed before the king. Yes, Your Majesty. Do you realize that Baron Salvatore is her father? I apologize, Your Majesty. You're a damn fool of a lead inquisitor. I cannot afford to anger a nobleman like Baron Salvatore, and he is furious. You do not allow your inquisitors to threaten his daughter in public and make an embarrassment of me, even if she is a malfetto. Do you understand? But your decree, Your Majesty... The king makes a disgusted sound. Carry out my decree discreetly. He leans back in his chair. And the young elites attack the qualifying races. You still haven't caught a single one. Taryn clamps down on his rising frustration. No, Your Majesty. I should throw you in a dungeon cell. Taryn keeps his eyes cast down at the throne room's marble floor. His teeth are clenched. Yes, Your Majesty, he says, but furious thoughts swarm in his mind. What a fool of a king. He wants the elites captured, but he's too cowardly to jeopardize his political relations. He's too cowardly to wage real war on Malfettos. Taryn doesn't mention aloud that his inquisitors threatened Lady Gemma on purpose, that it had been the queen's idea, that the game they play is tightening. Turn the king's nobles against the king, and he weakens. But as soon as Adelina delivers her information... Beside the king, Queen Julietta leans over to whisper something in her husband's ear. The king just waves her off in annoyance. Taryn's temper flares. Julietta glances briefly at him. Patience, my Taryn, her eyes seem to say. Everything will fall together. The next time you embarrass me, the king goes on. I will have your head. Taryn bows lower. There won't be a next time, Your Majesty, he answers loudly. The king looks smug and satisfied. He has not understood the double meaning in Taryn's words.
I hereby pledge to serve the Dagger Society, to strike fear into the hearts of those who rule Kenetra, to take by death what belongs to us, and to make the power of our elites known to every man, woman, and child. Should I break my vow, let the dagger take from me what I took from the dagger. The Dagger Society Initiation Pledge by Enzo Valenciano. Adelina Amuteru. The next morning when I go to meet Enzo in the cavern, the sky churns with black clouds,
and giant raindrops splatter on me as I hurry through the main courtyard toward the secret entrance. I head down the stairs alone, trying not to think about the last time I'd seen a storm like this. No disguise on me today. My hair is taken on a dark blue-gray sheen under the stormy sky, the strands pulled tightly away from my face, and my lashes are a dull shade. I've even left my porcelain mask behind. My clothing is simple Kenetran garb instead of Tamoran silks. Deep blue vest over white linen, dark trousers, dark boots lined with silver trim. I shake water from my hair as I go. By the time I get to the cavern, Enzo's already waiting for me. The rest of the space is empty. He's dressed in a dark doublet and his dagger hood is down, revealing his scarlet red hair. The anger that burned in his eyes last night is now replaced with cold sternness. I'm not entirely sure what he expects me to do, so I stop several feet in front of him and bow my head once. Here, alone, I suddenly feel small. I hadn't realized how much taller he is than I am. "Good morning," I say. "You asked for me, Your Highness, so here I am." Enzo watches me. I wonder if he'll comment on how I'd controlled my illusions yesterday. The memory makes me puff up a bit with pride. Surely he must be proud of that, regardless of the way I did it. "You won a challenge," he replies after a pause. His voice reverberates in the empty space. I lift my chin. "Yes." I make sure my answer sounds firm. A faint spark of red shines in his eyes. "Does it excite you, feeling fear?" I don't answer, but the words remind me of the chaos that had surrounded me at the races yesterday, and I can't help the rush of power the memory brings. "What do you want to learn so badly, Adelina?" Enzo asks. I give him a level stare. "Everything," I reply, surprised by my calmness. He holds out his gloved hands. Tendrils of smoke rise from both of his palms. "I am not Raffaele," he warns. "Brace yourself." Suddenly, two columns of fire explode to either side of me. They roar to the ceiling and rush out in two long lines, imprisoning me in a corridor of fire. I stumble backward a step, then try to focus on Enzo. "You did this yesterday. You can do it again now." I pull on the strings of energy I see. A hulking beast of a silhouette begins to rise from the ground. But I haven't concentrated for 2 seconds when Enzo rushes at me. Metal shines in both hands. His daggers are drawn. He lunges for me. My concentration breaks. My illusion vanishes. I throw myself to the ground and roll out of his way. The edges of my boots hit the wall of fire. I wince at the heat, then scramble frantically away. Enzo's on me again before I can blink. Metal flashes before my eye. I throw up a hand to protect myself, and the blade slashes a thin, shallow line into my palm. Pain blooms from the wound. He's wasting no mercy on me. This is not just an accelerated training session. It's a lesson. "Wait!" I call out. "Get up, little wolf," he snaps. The heat of the fire reflects off his crimson hair. I struggle to my feet. My hand leaves a bloody imprint on the ground. The pain and terror in me fuses, giving me the fuel I crave so badly. I pull on my energy, and this time I call forth a wolf of black mist, its eyes gold and its mouth pulled back in a snarl. It charges at Enzo. Enzo rushes right through it, dispelling it and my concentration in a puff of dark smoke. The threads slip out of my hands and back into the world. I make a grab for them again. The puff of dark smoke starts to shift into the shape of a hooded demon. Enzo makes a slashing motion at me with his hand. Fire erupts before my face. I lose my footing and fall, hitting my back hard on the ground. My lungs struggle for air. Enzo's dark robes stop beside me. I look up to see his cold, ruthless expression. "Again," he commands. Dante's words come back to me, but his voice sounds like my father's. You'll never master your abilities. Is a mess of black silhouettes and shapes resembling creatures all I can conjure? My anger and fear flood through me again. I drag myself to my feet. I'm past all pretense now. Blindly, I reach out for darkness and raise my hands over my head. Enzo attacks me again before I can focus my powers. His daggers reflect the firelight. Another cut, this time a small nick on my arm. The sting of it blossoms against my flesh and sends stars bursting across my vision. I duck down and scramble indignantly out of his path. Fear clouds my mind. The threads of energy are all there, glistening strings hovering inside me and all around me, but I can't focus long enough to grab onto them. I try again. Silhouettes appear in the air. Again, my concentration breaks. Enzo's assault is relentless, a blur of motion, knocking me down every single time I struggle to get back up. My hair falls out of its neat bun and strands of it stick against my face. Again, Enzo orders each time I fall. Again. 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 I try. I really do. But each time, I fail. Finally, I cry out and dart away from his blades, then turn around and run down the corridor of fire. My mind scatters. I give up trying to calm my energy. Ahead of me, I see the cavern entrance, the door shut tight. Before I can reach them, though, a wall of fire goes up in front of me. I trip, then collapse to the ground. I'm now blocked off on three sides by flames. I whirl around to see Enzo striding toward me, his robes billowing out behind him, his face a portrait of mercilessness. The heat around me burns the edges of my sleeves, blackening them. This time I curl up in a ball, shaking and bewildered. I can't focus enough to do anything. He stops me every time. How am I supposed to learn if I don't get a chance to concentrate? But of course, he's teaching me a lesson. This isn't a game. This is reality. And when I'm in the middle of a fight, this is what it'll be like. I whimper, shut my eye, curl up tighter, and try to shrink away from the columns of fire that roar around me. Tears run unbidden down my face. I sense a figure nearby. When I open my eye, I see Enzo on one knee before me, studying my tear-streaked face with a look of bitter disappointment. It is this look more than anything that pains me.
Broken so easily, he says with disdain. You're not ready after all.
The columns of fire vanish. He gets up and walks past me, his robes brushing over me. I'm left alone on the cavern floor, crumpled in a heap, unable to control my tears. Strands of my hair fall across my face. No, I am not broken easily. I will never break. I am going to find a way out of the mess I've gotten myself into. I will find a way to untangle myself from the Inquisition's grasp and finally be free. I look up at his retreating figure through a veil of teary anger. The anger fills me, seeping its blackness into my chest until I can feel it spilling out every fiber of my body, every energy string pulled so tight they might break. My strength begins to build. From the corner of my vision, I see my hair shift to a bright silver. I tremble. My hands flatten against the ground, then dig against it like claws. Pain shoots up my one crooked finger. Vicious black lines start to crawl along the cavern floor. They turn into dozens, then hundreds, then millions of lines until they fill the entire floor and snake up the walls. Between the dark lines drips blood, mimicking the red streaks on my injured palm. An enormous shadow blankets me. I don't need to look up to know what I created. Black wings, one so large that they seem to fill the entire length of the cavern, growing out from my back like a pair of phantoms. A low hiss fills the cavern, echoing off the walls. Enzo stops and turns to look at me, his eyes still hard. I smile at him. My giant wings shatter into a million pieces. Each piece morphs into a shard of dark glass. I send them hurtling at Enzo. They pass straight through him, hit the wall, and break into an explosion of glitter. Enzo doesn't flinch, but he does.